Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
It is Saturday morning, and you know what that means. You guys have stumbled across the number one internet sports talk show in the world, as well as our various other affiliate radio stations over on Indiana Talks. And tune in live 365 and our various other affiliates across this great land we call the United States, and what a great land it is. I tell you what, 1 week ago today, we were talking about a much gloom. We had a much more gloomier show, if you will. Obviously, we dedicated the entire show to Boston and what had happened out there, and just what a week it had unfolded. So I tell you what, it feels good to start the show normal. As normal as we could be here on The Balance. My digits, 917-889-8516. We got a jam-packed show for you today. Radio Speak Talks, Cliff Tanner, going to be joining us for the first hour. We'll be talking about some NASCAR. Were they penalty happy or what? Getting Matt Kenseth right where it hurts. And, you know, a lot of other action going on in NASCAR nationwide. We're going to get caught up on the NHRA series. And we've got some time, we'll dive into the IndyCar series. Obviously, just had a great race out at Long Beach and getting ready for Brazil, which is getting us geared up for the Indianapolis 500 here in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is where we flagship from, this great city of Indianapolis, Indiana, just a few short miles from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The greatest spectacle in racing is just right around the corner. And, you know, here locally here in Indianapolis, they have a lot of different events leading up to the Indianapolis 500, the 500 Festival, the mini marathon, the parade, a lot of stuff. We had Megan Beulah on last week talking with us about the mini marathon and some of the safety precautions they've got in place for that in light of the recent tragedy events in Boston. Also today, Mutt Strutt. Hey, pet owners, if you live here in the Indianapolis area, close to the Indianapolis area, grab your mutt, grab your pooch, going down to the Indianapolis 500, walk them around the track of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It is really pretty cool. Actually, I'm taking my pooch, Max the dog, down there with me today as well. Guys, and then in the second hour, myself, $2 Bill Josh, and we'll see who else calls in. We're going to talk about this year's draft recap, how the Colts did, and certainly if you want to vent about how your team did, give us a call, 917-889-8516. So all I'm going to tell you what, guys, if you miss a second, you've missed a lot right here on the Balance this morning. So we've got a great show for you guys. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Cliff Tanner from Radio Speed Talk.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution. IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
We are one Boston. No adversity, no challenge, nothing can tear down the resilience of the heart of the city and its people. Nothing can defeat the heart of the city. Nothing. Nothing will take us down because we take care of one another.
This is our city. And nobody's going to dictate our freedom.
Love and the strength covers our city. It will push us forward because this is Boston, a city with courage, compassion, strength that knows no bounds.
Following the tragedy at the 2013 Boston Marathon, there was One Boston. Donate to the One Fund at oneboston.org. That's the One Fund at onefundboston.org.
It's about getting there. The Indianapolis 500, May 26th.
Trouble on the cooldown lap between Nelson Piquet and Brian Scott.
And a lot of other activity going on in pit road.
Yes, there is.
Brian, what just happened at the end of the race with you and Piquet?
You know, unfortunately, we got caught up in that accident with 50 laps to go, and our teammate Austin got taken out, and I hate it for him because, you know, we're both running for points. And we were just trying to limp home a finish. We're running 15th, and Nelson, I don't know, for 15th place decided he was going to move me. Ran us up into the wall, did way more damage to our car than was already there. And when I went to talk to him, he just pushed and shoved me and then kicked me below the belt, which I think is just a chicken move. And I don't know. I guess we'll move on. Proud of these guys. They fought hard. We didn't have a fast enough Shore Lodge Camaro to do what we wanted. And we were just trying to limp home and get what we could.
Brian, how do you deal with situations moving forward? You guys are going for the championship together every single week. How do you put it behind you, especially at a place like Talladega next week?
Yeah, this isn't a just this race deal. He's got an issue with me from I don't know when, and he runs into me every week, and I've kind of had it. And a little part of me told me that he was going to hit me for 15th place, and then he did. And I was just showing my displeasure with him after the race. And then, you know, things escalated. I went to talk to him. I was a little heated, and then the camera probably shows it, but he kicks me right below the belt, which I think is a below-the-belt type shot.
All right, thanks, Brian. Contact between two drivers. Let's go for the other side of the story, Dave Burns.
Nelson, describe what led to the contact on the track and off the track after the race.
No, basically, I think a few laps to the end, the two slid in front of me. I touched him. He went inside. We both nearly spun. I passed him. That was it. The end of the race, got the checkers, went slow over there, and he door banged me, and I don't think he did the same thing to me in Martinsville just because I dived in the inside, and I didn't, you know, I never touched him in the back in Martinsville. He got pissed off because of that. I let that go, but I'm not going to take any more crap from him.
He seemed to think that you have a problem with him ongoing. Is there some issue over Martinsville and even past that?
Well, Martinsville, obviously, he tried to knock me off after the race, which I didn't think I did anything bad in the race. I was just aggressive and overtaking guys three wide, okay, but I was going in the inside. I wasn't pushing people out, so I don't think that was good. And now him getting pissed off with me again, I'm not going to take it.
Thanks for your side of the story. Alan, heated up down here on pit road. after a very competitive race.
All right, and that's how we left it out there in Richmond in the Nationwide Series. Joining us now from Radio Speed Talk, Mr. Cliff Tanner. Cliff, how are you doing, sir? Welcome to The Balance.
Hey, man, what's going on? Hey, I got to tell you, I was expecting it to break open with Kung Fu fighting on that one there.
Well, I look for some junk fight, kicking in the junk sound effects, but I didn't have time to get it all in. I got to tell you what, Cliff, I don't know about you, but if a grown man comes and kicks me in the junk, we got something going on. And, you know, I guess, you know, that just kind of leads us into what we wanted to talk about. Is really things are heating up across the board from the Nationwide Series and in the NASCAR Series. A lot going on. Obviously, the Nationwide Series out there in Richmond, BK takes the win. I want to talk a little bit about this heated altercation between Nelson Piquet Jr. and Brian Scott. Do we have a Gordon Boyer type fueling situation here? Is this a one and done thing? Because when you listen to these guys talk after the race last night, this sounds like this is something that's been brewing for a while. And so I'm just wondering who's going to get kicked in the junk next.
Well, hopefully nobody, because I'm going to tell you what, if somebody kicks me in the junk, remember, I got to recover eventually. you know, a racer never forgets. That's the bottom line. You always hear that, although you may not see incidents happen as fast as you want to, because that's what fans want. But this is not over. This is far from over, especially when you make a move like kicking somebody in the junk, so to speak. These guys have been going at it, and it's brewing. It's brewing. And, you know, there's even a little bit going on in the truck series. You're not hearing or seeing a whole lot about that yet. You know, granted, they've only had three races, but it's coming. Nelson Piquet Jr. has made some enemies because he is an aggressive driver. I don't think he's intentionally trying to move people out of the way, although yesterday looked like he might have been. You know, there's going to be retaliation. If you know you're not going to win the race and you're still going to get a few points, you know, why not pop them back and forth? But, you know, listening to Mr. Scott yesterday, he's not a very happy camper, and I would be either. If somebody did that to me, I'd be ready to drop. And it's probably a good thing a lot of people were there to stop him, because PK might have a broken nose. But I think this is more of a Jimmy Spencer, Kurt Busch type thing, where it's going to be a big one. Somebody's going to get a busted nose out of it eventually. You know, obviously they're not going to go on a big track to do that, but it's far from over. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of underlying brewing going all over the place across the board, as you said. And it's going to be interesting to see what NASCAR is going to do about it when you look at the penalties they're throwing down here the last two or three races on teams. What's going to happen when this thing escalates and somebody gets seriously hurt?
Right, absolutely. Well, and it is, you know, here's the thing. In the drivers, and we're going to get into this conversation here in a minute, but NASCAR is coming down hard on some drivers. Maybe they're finally starting to say, hey, guys, you're breaking the rules here, and we're going to do something about it. Or maybe they're suffering from when we've always done it, and so why can't we do it now type deal. I'm not really sure. Or if it's fair for the goose, it's fair for the gander. But there just seems to be a lot going on inside the NASCAR organization, as well as on the track, off the track, between drivers. So I think this, what we're going to see here is, unfortunately, a lot of those frustrations come to a head and come to an outbreak, if you will, when we get close to the point stands and really close to the chase. Well, obviously, BK outruns Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, to win the Richmond Nationwide race. We haven't talked about Nationwide here in a couple of weeks. Give us a little bit of a recap of what happened out there at Richmond. It's kind of unusual to see them race on a Friday evening in a Nationwide race.
Well, first of all, I love night races, man. There's just something about night races that kind of gets you excited. I got to tell you, that team that Kyle Busch is driving for, he's won four in a row going into this race, and BK, you could tell, didn't want it. I thought, really, for a long time there, we would see Kevin Harvick come away with that win. But, you know, it was a pretty good race overall, and, you know, Keselowski made a nice move inside of Busch with 10 laps to go and held him off and ended that streak. And, you know, anytime you get on a short track with you know, Kyle Busch, he's tough to beat. And you know, I want to throw out kudos to Johanna Long. I think ended up finishing 16th or 18th yesterday. She ran a pretty good race, stayed pretty clean for the most part. You know, and she's, you know, a lot of, for people that don't know who she is, she drives for ML Motorsports, which is located right here in Indiana, in Warsaw. And yeah, I just love watching her race, and she did a pretty good job. She actually got up as high as 13th yesterday, and I think would have kept moving if they wouldn't have had that one caution. But it was a great race, and you hate to see it end with somebody like that. But to go back to your point there for a second, Tom, NASCAR wants this to happen because this is what the fans want. This is what people are starting to look for. But I think they need to watch it because people are going to be expecting this too much and be disappointed when things don't happen right away. You know, it's like saying, you know, I went to a race or I went to a what do they call that? Where they do the fighting for some reason. But you go there, you see that, you know, it's like a race breaking out. And I don't want it to come down to that. I do know that NASCAR needs some of that drama to keep the fans enthralled, to keep them around, but they're going to have to watch what they're doing.
Well, I think, you know, I think maybe what you're talking about is hockey. We go to a hockey game expecting a puck.
No, UFC, that's what I was trying to say.
UFC, oh, okay. Well, I went to a USC fight and didn't see a fight. I guess I wasn't going there. I'm a little slow this morning. I thought you were talking about going to a normal sporting event and expecting to see a fight, you know.
Right, exactly. You're on the same link with me, man. I was just thinking of a different genre, that's all.
Well, when I go, well, typically in my mind, if I go to a USC fight or mixed martial arts fight, I'm expecting to see a fight. But anyway, we do digress. Well, it brings us obviously to, you know, is this what's really going on? We look at what happened with Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth had a great week last week, only to have, well, let's just, you know, since we're on the topic of being kicked in the junk, only to be kicked in the junk by NASCAR. Matt Kenseth won the STP 400 at Kansas City Speedway last Sunday, but a post-race inspection showed a rule violation with an engine of his Toyota Camry. A connecting rod in the engine of his Toyota weighed 2.7 grams under the minimum requirement, hitting Kenseth with a 50-point penalty and dropping him from 8th in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series to 14th. And you know, he got the pole as well, and he was stripped from the pole. And anytime I can use pole and strip in the same sentence and be talking about sports, I'm all good. But of course, Joe Gibbs, and you expect more from an owner like Joe Gibbs. And this just leads to the bigger question, you know. This is something that's been going on. It's like, hey, we've been doing it all this time. Now, come on, we're not stupid enough to believe that Penske and Joe Gibbs are going to make such stupid mistakes. The thing is, NASCAR has turned the blind eye before. They're not doing it anymore.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I don't like the way NASCAR does things because, you know, they're a private entity. They don't have to make things public, so they don't make the rule public. And when they find, when you go back to Keselowski and Keselowski's team and Joey Logano's team, and they say that it was detrimental to, you know, they wouldn't tell you exactly what it was, but they may have been playing around a little bit. And then the Kenseth thing come down, and I'm thinking, God, NASCAR, are you freaking crazy? Are you nuts? Do you know what the hell you're doing? But I got to tell you, I was watching the race last night and a little bit of the preview of it, and I got to thinking, and even this morning it was really gnawing in my head. And you know, they don't like you messing around with their cars without asking. Now, you can ask, and they can say, okay, let's take a look at it. All right, that looks good. You can use that. That's fine. But one thing that I heard Robin Pemberton say that really stuck in my head yesterday was, you can, you know, everybody tries to mess with the rules a little bit. Everybody knows they do. That's part of life. That's part of racing. Everybody tries to find the advantage, especially now when you got to be looking at the cars and you're still messing with the new Gen 6. But the number one smack-around rule that you do not mess with is the engine, and they did that. Did they do it on purpose? I honestly don't know if they did or not. You know, there's cases to be made on both ways. There's accusations that are always going to be made on both ways. But the reason they got slammed harder than the other guys was because they messed with the engine.
Right, and I guess that's just when you look at Joe Gibbs and you look at Penske, and let's just talk about Joe Gibbs because he just happens to be the one that got caught this week. Let's not be stupid enough to believe that he's the only one doing it. But when you look at owners like Joe Gibbs, he's very smart, obviously coached in the NFL on top of other things that he's done, very, very well-diverse, obviously have the ability to mentor young drivers such as Tony Stewart and other people that we – so we know that Joe Gibbs knows the rules. Why would somebody like Joe Gibbs put everything that he has at risk for that?
Well, let me try to explain it this way, Tom. I find it hard to believe that you can totally blame Joe Gibbs for this whole thing. Now, granted, he's the operations guy. He knows what's going on. I don't know if you remember a few years ago when Michael Waltrip first came up with his team, and they had an issue at Daytona where one of their guys back at the engine shop was putting in, you know, turbo parts, basically, illegal parts. And you know, an owner knows who his crew is. An owner knows what they should be doing. But, you know, let's face it, Tom, you can't necessarily blame that 100% on Joe Gibbs because that guy can't be there for everything. Granted, he's won Super Bowls. He's won NASCAR championship. I mean, you know, I guess he hasn't won a championship. You know, he did with Tony. But you can't blame Gibbs. But, yes, when you take a look at it, you look at the owners out there, the Hendricks, the Roush, and Gibbs, Waltrips, Gibbs would be the last guy you would even consider that might be doing this type of thing. But he's got guys that go on down. Did he know about it? Again, nobody can prove that 100%. It's a shock that it come from the Gibbs camp. But then again, it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Some people just get away with things. But I'm telling you, NASCAR has gotten a burr up their butt, and they're checking everything real close. So you better be riding tight because I think we're far from seeing this happen. Or with it being done, I should say. They're going to be inspected. We'll find some more penalties coming down in the next couple of weeks, guaranteed.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I'm all for, I'm sure Joe Gibbs is in every place at one time. Obviously, he has a lot going on. He has people. But I do know one thing for a fact, that Joe Gibbs, Roush, all your owners, every one of those get a complete detailed report from the post-inspection report to what they're doing. I don't believe for a minute that Joe Gibbs didn't know what was going on. Now, whether or not he decided to look the other way, you don't win Super Bowls and championships, and you don't get to be Joe Gibbs and Jack Roush and Penske. You don't get to be those guys without being very detail-oriented and without knowing everything. So he knew. I don't believe for a minute that he didn't know. The fact is, ultimately, if you own a business and you know I have a few myself, if one of my employees go out there and do something stupid, I'm going to know about it. And at the same time, it ultimately comes back down. Hey, it's your team. You own it. Take responsibility for it.
Well, I'm not saying he's not taking responsibility because he is taking responsibility of it. I think it may have been a little bit harsh. I mean, they took 50 points from Kenseth. They took his bonus points away. And then he turns around and gets the pole, which I think is funny. I mean, to me, that's the of yours NASCAR, if you want to know my opinion about that. But, you know, but to take that many points and that many dollars, I mean, and again, we're talking about the engine. It was $200,000 fine, 6-race suspension for Gibbs and the engine builders, or the crew chief. And then you take in the fact that Gibbs cannot have owner points on that car for, I think it's, what, 6 races or something like that. He can get owner points on the other. And then they took away manufacturing points on top of that. You know, it's your opinion, Tom. And I'm not saying that he did or didn't know, but there's a case to be made both ways. Because, you know, I'm convinced that the car owner cannot know everything that is going on. And if that was the case, why weren't they found in the other cars? That is, again, a crew chief's decision, an engine builder decision to try things out. You can't necessarily say he knew or he didn't know. I mean, that's just me. But, you know, you again, you hear a lot of people say, Oh, Joe Gibbs, I just can't believe he would cheat, blah, 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 blah. Well, let's take a look and go back to Hendricks. How many times has Jimmy Johnson and Jack Nowlands been busted for things? I mean, every race team does it. That's part of it. You're always looking for an advantage. It's not necessarily cheating. They're just trying to figure out an advantage. The only thing different here is they didn't go through the proper channels on even all the way back to Keselowski and Logano's thing. They didn't go through the proper channels to get it. But, again, like I said, when you mess with an engine, that is the biggest no-no there is in NASCAR, and that's why they got popped so bad.
Right, and absolutely, and they should have been punished. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying there, Cliff. I mean, maybe he didn't know right away.
Right.
I just can't believe that, you know, that type of a situation. I mean, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not enough in the loop on the front office of things, of knowing how who reports what to an owner. But if I was a team owner, I'd want to know everything. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, after you win the race and after you have the pole, in my mind as an owner, I know they're going to be looking for things. So I want to see the report before it goes to post-inspection. Because there's nothing that we could do to change what's there, but I can
right.
at least know what's there. And I'm not going to – go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ted. You go first.
I was just going to say that that way I'm not sucker punched. No matter what happened, if my team's done something, we'll deal with that inside the garage and we'll get that taken care of and we'll take our penalty and move on down the road. But I want to know so I'm not sucker punched, so that when I get these fines and I get these points deducted and I lose owner points, I'm not asking questions and doing my own internal investigations and asking what the heck happened.
But I guarantee you, he is doing that now. And it's probably post, which is wrong. He should have done that, you know. And I agree with you. An owner should stay on top of things like that. But you know, I don't know if you've ever been down to Victory Lane in one of those things, but they actually have NASCAR officials, when they push the car back to tech after they've been in Victory Lane, they will not let you within 10 feet of that. They don't want nothing touched or anything like that. But when you get that thing back to tech, they literally pull that thing. And if they see one thing wrong, then it goes to their garage, and they pull that thing apart even more, and they do those type of things. But you're right. People should understand that they need to make sure that car is right before it goes on the line. But sometimes things happen. Sometimes, I mean, let's look at what the part was. I mean, who says that they didn't get that shipment from somebody else and they just put them on there without checking, which is wrong. But I'm just saying, there's so many scenarios playing here. The bottom line is they got caught. They got punished for it. And I'm 99% sure that that's going to, you know, when they go through the appeals process, that one's going to stick hard.
Well, absolutely, and we move on across the series. This just isn't happening in the Cup Series. We look at situations. Well, look at what happened here recently, and moving us over to the next series there in NASCAR, the Truck Series. Obviously, they're back and running, and the number 98 truck was found to have violated actions and rules as well. And the crew chief was as a result of that, crew chief Joel Scherer has been fined $10,000 and suspended from NASCAR competition until the next four NASCAR Truck Series events have completed. He has been placed on NASCAR probation until December 31st, and the team was also docked 25 championship points. Driver Johnny Sauter, obviously, and 25 championship owners Mike Kerb. So, if what you're saying, Cliff, is this, hey, well, it came from somebody else, we didn't know. Well, now we're over the Truck Series, the Team 98, completely different owner, Mike Kerb, and we got situations there.
I was just making a case, Tom. I'm not saying I believe everything that I said. I was just saying that's a case to be made. But I think what the bottom line comes down here is they brought up this Gen 6, and they're still working on it. I mean, the car is definitely – the races have been a lot better. I mean, you can't deny that. But the bottom line is I think what, you know, I mean, even the rumor back to Logano and Keselowski when they got caught is they were told by another team because they've been overhearing conversations, you know, because when you're in a garage, you're not necessarily placed in your team. I mean, you know, you're spread out depending on where your points are and all that. But, you know, I think what the realization has come to, and what I think the underlying thing of this whole deal is, NASCAR has let everybody get away with stuff for so long, and now, you know, when you got teams inside bickering against teams and against each other and things like that, I think they're going to start getting a lot stricter on things until they get this thing under control, or maybe NASCAR needs more money. Hell, I don't know.
They might be that, because people aren't traveling to races. We know that for sure. Well, obviously, Smoke likes to be out there at Richmond. He's a big short track guy. We knew him from here in Indiana, obviously, at the dirt tracks out at Eldora. Just growing up here in Indiana, we certainly know Tony Stewart and his history with the short track, and he's gonna be sporting the Roush Truck Center colors this weekend out at Richmond. So. You look at an owner like Tony Stewart, let's combine two things. He loves the short track, and he's got his hand in a lot in racing. What kind of lessons can a young owner like Tony Stewart, when we say young owner, we look at when you put him up against comparisons of Roush, Gibbs, and some of those others, not necessarily age or experience per se, but when it comes to just now really becoming known more as a team owner than a team driver, Tony Stewart, and obviously he likes the short track, so we'll talk about the truck series a little bit and how about what Tony Stewart is, but what lessons is he learning from the Penske's and the Gibbs and those sort of things? So let's face it, I mean, he's got some pretty high-profile drivers on his own payroll.
Yes, he does, and he's getting ready to have another one next year. So, Tony Stewart is first of all, let me say this. If I was somebody on Tony Stewart's team and I screwed up, I'd be scared to death because he would pound the crap out of him. You know what I'm saying?
And then fire him.
Yeah, and then fire him, right. or as he's going out the door, he's, you know, kicking him in the butt, whatever. But, you know, Tony Stewart is no dummy, and a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, he's owned all kinds of cars even before he took over, you know, with Stewart Haas. And I can guarantee you, he's a hands-on owner. Not every owner in this sport is a hands-on. They may go through and they may do things, but, I mean, you know, he's a much smaller scale than what a Gibbs is or a Roush or even a Hendricks. And those guys keep a pretty good thumb on theirs. But Smoke, I can guarantee, is kicking back, watching this, going, wow, you know, I better not catch any of you guys doing anything. And I could see him ruling that with an iron fist, because he's not going to put up with that kind of stuff. Because Tony Stewart, I mean, let's face it, I mean, he's got good sponsorship coming, you know, from GoDaddy and various others, but Quicken Loans. But he's not going to let his team be decimated by something like that, because that being a smaller team, once again, those kind of penalties could really – really hurt somebody, and he's already struggling this year, and that's the last thing he wants. But he's sitting back and he's learning a lot, I guarantee it, and he's taking it all in, and he's probably more hands-on than most of the other owners are.
Well, one of the things about Tony Stewart, some of the latest news, did you hear this? Denica Patton, I mean, this was headlines above Matt Kenseth's penalties and above all the stuff we've been talking about the last half hour, which is real news. What has really dominated the NASCAR social media this week, believe it or not, and Cliff, I just want to let you know, it's happened. Danica Patrick's divorce is finalized. So there's ones that would argue that she's been living in adultery with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. over the last few weeks. Or maybe they haven't been doing anything. Maybe they were waiting for the divorce to be final.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
Danica, you know, Patrick's. I would be remiss. I mean, we had to let the world know that after a 60-day stay, I mean, it's finally happened. The divorce is there. It's done. Danica Patrick's uncontested divorce from Paul Hosfeld, or whatever his name is, has been finalized. Like I said, her current sweetie is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And if you follow those two on Twitter like I do, as an addiction that I have, they do these little tweets back and forth to each other. Baby, moo, 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 smooch, smooch, smooch. I'll try not to get you in the rear end on the track.
Wow.
Anyway. So, hey, you know, Tony Stewart's got to keep his act together. He's got Danica Patrick and GoDaddy, and, you know, he's
You know what? And that's exactly why she is sponsored by GoDaddy. Look at all the press she gets. I mean, even last night's race, they were, you know, I think when they had the red light, or the red flag, excuse me, not the red light, they were showing a picture of her and Ricky up in the stands, and she was eating dinner. And Carl Edwards was commentating. I don't know if you saw this part.
He goes, her ass is so hot. I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
And then go ahead.
Here's the bottom line. Said best by David Gilliland, you know, grow up, shut up, and race. That's what she needs to do. That's the bottom line. Because I'm getting sick and tired of hearing all the hoopla on the outside of it. You know, granted, it's she's a big profile and a big name, and she's bringing popularity back in the NASCAR. But damn it, it's time to, you know, on the track. Let's see how she does. But keep in mind, we're at another short track. Last time she was on one, she finished what, 12th or 13th?
Will she ever win a race this year? Maybe that's the question.
No, she's not going to win a race. There's too many expectations on her, Tom. Realistically, she's a rookie. She's going for rookie points, and I'm not even sure. I haven't even looked, but she's got to be close to even or a bit above Steinhaus. I mean, Steinhaus had a good run last week, and she didn't, but... you know, she's a rookie. She's still learning these tracks. There's a lot of these tracks she hasn't been on, you know, and I think you're going to see her keep improving. Is she going to win this year? If she does, I'll eat my shorts. I don't see that happening.
I don't want to see that happen, actually. I hope she doesn't win. All right, Mr. Cliff Tanner, we got to take a break. We'll get back. We're going to break down all the latest action in the NHRA. We'll be right back, guys, right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Well, I'm a wanted man, yes I am. They ain't never ever gonna catch me.
I'm on the run, on that open road, and that's me.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
My daddy left us. I was only 6 months older than you are now.
I don't remember him. You will remember me.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
Your enemy will be out in force, but you cannot meet him on his own low ground.
What you going to do if one of these pitchers throws through your head?
I'll duck.
Mark my words and circle this day. Negroes are going to run the white man straight out of baseball.
This ain't the America I know. You hear me?
If they knew you, they would be ashamed.
If Robinson can help us win, then he is going to play on this ball club.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
Wearing me down.
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
Give me a uniform. Give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
I father, I Brooklyn Dodger them. I jack, I rob, I send. Oh man, I'm Jackie Robinson. Except when I run base, I dodge the pen.
I'm just a ball player.
You a hero.
Why don't you look in the mirror? This is a white man's game.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here.
I'm a Brooklyn boy. I may take some getting used to.
Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42.
About getting there. The Indianapolis 500, May 26th.
All right, my minions, welcome back to the balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So good that you guys could join us on a Saturday. Also, shout out to all our fans out on Indiana Talks. I know you guys are listening to us a little bit later today. Indiana Talks was not able to carry us live today. We do apologize for that, but I do know that you're listening to us now. And we're so glad that you guys could join us and you missed our live show. But we do this every Saturday morning. You know, I will also let you know that, and we were talking about behind-the-scenes things and how things go on in racing. We have our own little race team here at The Balance. And, you know, the crew chief, if you will, Michelle Jones, our social media director, producer, the voice behind the voice, if you will, gets us our guests, gets our lineup set up, talking points, all of that good stuff goes out to Michelle Jones. And I tell you what, her birthday was yesterday. She doesn't want a big deal said about it. But we appreciate her, and happy birthday to Michelle yesterday, the big 3-3. She's celebrating. Oh, the good old days, huh, Cliff? The good old days.
Wow. Well, happy birthday, Michelle. And it's about 33. God, I would love to go halfway back to that.
I'm waking up at 44 and feeling like I got to unfold, and my knees are creaking, and I'm hearing sounds where – I didn't even know where sounds came from. All right, well let's I think we've covered everything obviously in NASCAR, but I do want to just get your thoughts real quickly. I know you're a big truck racing fan. What are your thoughts? Obviously Matt Crafton, the leader, and then we were just talking about Johnny Sauter, Jeb Burton, and Ryan Blaney and Ty Dillon. Now they're sitting number five is Ty Dillon, and not the first time we've talked about him on this show. I think that he, obviously, we talk about Ty Dillon, he's Austin's little brother, but obviously comes from a great racing family. Would you be surprised at all if Ty takes the truck, the Camping World Truck Series Championship this year?
Not at all, but I got to tell you, Sauter is on a mission, but a guy you really need to look out for is Jeb Burton. That kid is amazing. He can drive just about anything I've ever seen him drive. I've seen him drive late model. I've seen him drive everything, with the exception of a cup car, obviously. But the kid is amazing. And, again, he's just going to keep getting better. When they start going around some of the other tracks that they've been on, he's just going to keep getting better. But he's got to watch it because he's gaining some enemies amongst the veterans, so to speak, because he does kind of have an aggressive driving style at times. But Ty Dillon wants this thing because I guarantee you next year when Kevin Harvick leaves, I think we're going to see Austin go into Cup, and then we'll see Ty go into the Nationwide, and eventually both of those guys will be on the Cup team. It's going to be good. But, you know, Kyle Larson's a guy you got to watch out for. That kid's pretty good. There's just all kinds of people that could be. Timothy Peters, he's kind of ticked off. He had a great year last year, his best ever. Let's see what he does. He's kind of struggling at the beginning of this year, and you can never count out Hornaday because that guy could put five or six wins in a row together in no time, and he's got something to prove still because he's pretty much the elder statesman when it comes to that series. But, no, definitely to answer your question after I went all the way around, Ty Dillon is definitely I would not be surprised at all.
Well, if this radio thing don't work out for you, you can always run for office. I mean, you certainly know how to answer the question a roundabout way. Well, we're going to move on to our next topic. I love that sound, Cliff. I don't get enough of that sound. We all love racing and the sound of racing, but there's just something we talk about that sound. Obviously, here in Indianapolis, out at Lucas Oil Raceway, when the U.S. Nationals come, but still NHRA, we don't talk about them enough here on the balance, and certainly hope that we could get a lot of them put it. But they're just kind of in their own little world, an island all by themselves, got their own fans, got their own agenda, and certainly they're the Switzerland of racing. They're completely neutral. There's never any major controversies going on over there, right?
You don't see the big fights or the, you know, hating each other and stuff like that. I mean, I'm telling you, man, it's probably the most fan-friendly. But I got a point on, you know, make a point on this. We were talking on the show this week about last week they were down at Charlotte doing the four wide. And you know, and I know, what it sounds like with two cars getting out there getting ready to drag. Could you imagine the decibels and the power that is, you know, you're talking all those horsepowers running with four wide? And you could hear it on the TV, but could you imagine being standing right there, being a starting guy? I mean, you'd almost think he'd have to wear leaded boots before he gets blown up into the air.
You're not kidding. You know, speaking of Michelle, she went with us, and of course you know this, but went with us last year out there to the U.S. Nationals at Lucas Oil Raceway. First time she'd ever been to an NHRA race. And when you go up to that top tower there, that top suite tower at the Crow's Nest view, it vibrates something fierce. And she was just like, I got to get off of here. I can't stand up here because I tell you what, the vibration. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, and I'm sorry that I have a brain fart, but did you see that car explode, the fiberglass shell come off the funny car and into the stands last week? Did you see that? Was it Robert Height? That was who it was.
It was Robert Height, correct. I did. And, you know, that's just a matter of time before that was going to happen. Luckily, nobody got hurt. You know, that's one thing, you know, because that thing floats up in the air, you've got time to react. But, you know, I was listening to him, talking to him last week, and they have no clue what happened there. And thank God those bodies on those things are not heavy. A lot of people think they are, but they're really not. They're like a big piece of plastic because the motor, you know, obviously when that kind of thing, when that motor blows and blows that thing up, it's going to go way up in the air, and hopefully you've got some time to react to it. But it's always a scary moment when you see something like that happen. But, you know, again, it all comes down to what happened at, you know, at the other race with Larson, Daytona. You're going to have those kind of things that happen. And, you know, the fans know that there's a danger to that, and hopefully they can get that thing under control. But I don't know, when you're talking about that much power, man, you know, you talk about the fans. Imagine what the driver hears when that thing blows up like.
Right, absolutely. Are you still with us, Cliff?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Oh, it sounded like I could hear you. It sounded like you just dropped off there for a second. I wanted to just make sure that I didn't lose you. Well, obviously the NHRA guys travel out to Texas this past week at the NHRA Dollar General 4-Wide Nationals, and we're just talking about that. Matt Hagan ended a 17-month winless drought by the funny car victory Sunday at the Dollar General NHRA 4-Wide Nationals, fueled by throttle at Z-Max Dragway. Gee whiz, too many sponsors.
Yellow, baby.
Mellow Yellow. I gotta get that. I gotta get that song going. Matt Hagan, and you know he's got to be thrilled about this 17-month breaking the losing streak, if you will. I like Matt Hagan. He's a good, talented driver, and why it's been so long without a win actually is surprising to me.
Well, it definitely is surprising because Matt Hagan, he won the championship 2 years ago, and he's been kind of struggling ever since. I know they made, some crew chief changes and all that with Beckman and him, and I knew he was never out of it. And I think some of that, when you more so in drag racing than any other racing, is stuff like that starts getting into your head. And you got to keep in mind that a drag racer has to concentrate on the timing. He's got to concentrate on so many things out there. And if your mind's not in it, or you're too eager to make sure you get a good start, sometimes that can mess with a guy's mind. But I tell you what, when you win, that does a whole other thing, because you want to talk about somebody that's really came out of nowhere this year and has been struggling the last couple of years is Cruz Pendergrat. Man, I'm telling you what, he's shot up second in points, and he's the number one qualifier again this week going into today's qualifying runs.
Well, not bad for a Southwest Virginian cattle rancher, huh?
No, not at all, man. Hey, whatever works, man.
You ain't winning races. Better do something, huh? I was Spencer Massey, Top Fuel, Mike Edwards, Pro Stock, and Hector Arana Jr. In the Pro Stock Motorcycle Series as well. While we move on to this next week in the Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series, and that is they're going to be out at the Summit Racing Equipment NHRA Southern Nationals. And that's not quite as big of a mouthful, but that's down in Commerce, Georgia, at the Atlanta Dragway. Talk with us a little bit about the 33rd Annual Summit Racing Equipment NHRA Southern Nationals, Cliff.
Well, I got to tell you, we'll start off with Pro Stock Motorcycle. That is my biggest surprise this year. I mean, in the last couple of years, it's always been Andrew Hines or Eddie Craigwick coming from the Hines team, and the Harley Davidsons have really been struggling this year, which is kind of surprising. But it's no surprise to me that the guy that's leading the points and tearing it up right now is Hector Arana Jr. And seniors have been up there quite a bit too. As you see, Craywick is down at fourth in points, and poor Andrew Hines has dropped way down to ninth. So, and granted, it's still early. There's a lot of racing to go, but that's probably my biggest surprise. And next to Cruz Pendergrat, like I said, I mean, he seems to have buckled up. His team's got everything together. He's getting off the line good, and he's tearing it up. He didn't win last week, but, he had a qualification run, number one, because they got rained out last week. And this week, again, he's going into the day with the number one. So, but we've seen so many times in Funny Car where one guy will light it up for four or five races, and then all of a sudden he'll be struggling because it's still – to this day, the most competitive class that the NHRA has right now. And it is going to go down to the last day like it has been. And, you flip over with Spencer Massey is finally starting to get his stuff together after he was let go by DSR. And then he rehired, and he's had some struggles. But last week he makes a nice run. But, again, the DSR team, when you're talking Top Fuel, is tough to beat. But Coletta has really been moving up through the ranks a little bit there as well. So, it's always some good racing, and I can't wait. I really can't wait till we get to go see them. We're going to go see them in Norwalk. You ought to go. You think Indianapolis is a cool place to see. You ought to see that one. Stand right on top, right at the starting line, and you get the nitro measles, baby. That's the best way to watch a race.
I hopefully I can do that. Got a lot going on, but I know for a fact we'll be out at Lucas Oil Raceway. Another driver I like a lot. You and I have had a chance to interview her together again back at the Nationals last year at Lucas Oil Raceway is Erica Anders. Now, Stevens, in my opinion, easily the most successful woman in the NHRA Pro Stock history. She had a stellar 2012 season behind the wheel of her GK Motorsports Chevy that produced 4 wins and 7 final rounds and a 4th place finish. There's one thing that would make her even more proud, and that would to win in front of her hometown crowd at the O'Reilly Auto Parts NHRA Spring Nationals. Erica Anders, now Stevens, what a great personality she has. You know, I know we talk about the Forces a lot, and we talk about Courtney Force a whole lot, but there are other female drivers out there who are very successful, and Erica Anders, like I said, is certainly one of the most successful NHRA drivers of all time, and she just happens to be a female.
Well, I got to tell you what, Tom, you know, I've always liked her. I've liked her attitude, but when we actually sat down and interviewed her last year, I gained a lot more respect for her, and you know what? I think she got kind of screwed over in their version of the chase last year, and I think she might have won last year, but as you know, her crew chief ended up racing at Indianapolis, and it almost seemed like he concentrated a lot more on his car than her car, and you could see the disappointment in her. She's got something to prove, and she will win the championship. It may not be this year, it may not be next year, but she's going to be there. And it's funny, you know, we talk about how you go into NASCAR and all that. When guys start a truck, their goal is to get in sprint. The cool thing I like about NHRA is we ask Erica that same question, if you remember right. Do you plan on moving up? She loves it. Doug Anderson has said the same thing. A lot of the guys in the funny car have said the same thing. They love to stay there, and she is going to be a force to be reckoned with for years to come. And, you know, I would not be surprised to see her running for the championship again this year.
Well, absolutely, and I wouldn't be surprised if she actually wins it. Absolutely. Well, you know, we want to just cram in a little bit about IndyCar, obviously, because we're getting geared up for the Indianapolis 500. Any thoughts from Long Beach? I didn't get your blog this week, so I don't really know what your thoughts are. And also in closing, and we'll get to that in just a second, but I do want to get your thoughts on the whole Boston thing. But first, I want to get your thoughts on IndyCar Long Beach, Brazil. I mean, maybe it's just because we have so many foreign drivers. I could see why there would be a market there. But to me, I just think we could either get them ready again, because now they got to come back, and you know that's a big undertaking for a team to move to take an entire race overseas. And that's one reason why, on the flip side of it, why we don't see a lot of Formula One races here in the United States, because it is a big undertaking. And then have to do that, and then to get everything ready for Indianapolis 500. To me, that is a bad placing of scheduling for the Brazil race. Let's put it at the beginning of the season. Why put it here in between Long Beach and the Indianapolis 500? Thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I mean, that's insanity. Why they would even do that, I have no idea. And I understand why they're trying to go over. They're trying to get other fans. They're trying to get F1 fans over, and F1 comes over here trying to get Indy fans over. But you're right. I mean, logistics-wise, that's just insanity. But, again, that's why we, you know, there's 3 or 4 weeks between the two races. Well, actually, it'd be 3 weeks between races, but you're right. But I can almost guarantee you they have built a car for that over there, and their Indies are going to be here. But even still, driving, you know, or traveling over there and then coming back, I don't know, man. To me, if you're going to do that, I agree. It should either be at the very beginning or towards the end.
Well, and I just I don't even know why we have a Brazilian race. But that's just me. I'm pulling a Kenny here. He's not here to say anything about it, so I'm going to.
I agree. I totally agree. I wish we wouldn't do that kind of thing. I mean, you know, let's face it. The only race that Danica Patrick won was in Japan, and most of the guys stayed over here for that race. You know, I mean, we could go all day long on why they do that. And why, you know, it's insanity to me. If you want the fans, you need to stay here in America and bring them on. And I will say this about last week's race. Tell me now that AJ Foyt don't know what the hell he's doing.
I never told you that in the first place. That was Kenny.
I'm not paying you, Tom. I'm talking to everybody.
No, I totally agree with you. It was a great race. And you know, a lot of people aren't big fans out there of those road courses, street courses, what have you. But you know. I won't use the terminology that Kenny used. We'll just say a Japanese racer winning a race sponsored by Toyota in a Texans car. Who would have ever thunked it?
I never would have, but, you know, A.J. Foyt is no dummy. He knows talent when he sees it. And, you know, Sato has a little bit of problem with aggressive driving. I think he would be a lot better if he realized, and you know what? To me, that's big cojones, and there's nothing wrong with aggressive driving as long as you don't get too stupid. But if he would settle down just a little bit, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the IRL, guarantee it.
All right, Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk, getting us up to speed on all everything that goes fast. Cliff, as usual, it's always to have you on board. We got to go now, sir, but where can people find your work and stalk you on Facebook or Twitter?
Well, you can go to RadioSpeedTalk.com. You hear every interview we've ever done. You go to Facebook.com/RadioSpeedTalk. I'm at RadioSpeedTalk, too. That's the number 2, not TWO. And I'm always trying to do some Twittering during the races. But check it out. We got a good show. We talked a lot about some of the penalties and other things coming down. So we just enjoyed being on your show, Tom, and I appreciate you having us on.
Anytime. And obviously you can hear Radio Speed Talk right here on the Balance Radio Network tomorrow. Cliff, you have yourself a good week. We'll be right back, guys.
Friend.
We'll be right back. If we get back right around the corner, we got $2 Bill Josh. We've got Ed Kratz and Pete LaFuchsia all giving us a recap of what happened in the NFL draft and what can we look for still yet to come in the rounds that are yet to go. Right here on the Balance Radio Network. We'll be right back, my menu.
Hooked on supercharged exaggeration. Just a speed junkie on wheels, but that's just me. It's just me. I'm shooting for the top five, thinking the speed. I'm a nitro burning slingshot, ready to.
We are one Boston. No adversity. No challenge. Nothing can tear down the resilience of the heart of the city and its people. Nothing can defeat the heart of the city. Nothing. Nothing will take us down. Because we take care of one another.
This is our city. And nobody's gonna dictate our freedom.
It's a glorious thing. A love and a strength covers our city. It will push us forward because this is Boston, a city with courage, passion, strength that knows no bounds.
Following the tragedy at the 2013 Boston Marathon, there was one Boston. Donate to the One Fund at oneboston.org. That's the One Fund at onefundboston.org.
It's about getting there. The Indianapolis 500, May 26th.
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Like that, don't you?
right, my minions, welcome back to hour number the two of The Balance. My name is Saul Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you guys could join us. Always good to have Cliff Tanner on with us from Radio Speed Talk, talking about everything that goes fast. And we had a good conversation about NASCAR and obviously a lot going on over there in NASCAR. And especially if you follow NASCAR, you know exactly what I'm talking about with the penalties with Matt Kenseth and, you know, Joe Gibbs Racing and Penske and, you know, all of the stuff that's going on there. But hour number two here, we're going to break down this week's draft. Joining us is Mr. $2 Bill Josh, my partner in crime as well. And Mr. Ed Kratz, fresh out of a press conference from the Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to get know what's going on with him. Pete LaFuchsia just happens to be a guy that also has his own show on Indiana Talks as well, but also an avid Buffalo Bills fan, not very happy with what they did. So we'll just start with everybody. Mr. $2 Bill Josh, how are we doing, sir? Have you arrived at your destination in Birmingham?
Yes, just got here a little bit ago. How are you doing this morning, Tom?
Fantastic. Josh taking some time to join us from his road trip to Birmingham. You ask, why would someone go to Birmingham? Well, there's got to be one reason, and that's just to see people that he knows there. There's really nothing going on there. Mr. Ed Kratz, fresh out of a press conference with the Philadelphia Eagles, a presser, and we're going to get into all of that. But Mr. Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. A correction. I'm actually going into a press conference at 11 o'clock. The Eagles are bringing in their second round pick to tight end from Stanford, Zach Ertz. It's
okay.
Coming in at 11. But I've been in and out of press conferences for the last 2 days that I've found.
Well, there you go. I can't read a text. I'm on the air reading text, so it's like I read the first portion of it, and then I my eyes are going in other directions. The thing is about being a writer, nothing against it, but you guys could just stay there and just type. You know, in radio, we got people talking in our ears. We got people typing stuff on the screen. We're trying to stay one step ahead of our guest. You know, there's just a lot going on.
If it was that easy, everybody would do it. So,
absolutely, you know,
special breed of person, and you're the one.
And speaking of special breed of people, and I really mean this in the most retarded sort of way, but Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, a stand-up comedian, and also does a lot for us behind the scenes here on The Balance. You know, all of our little funny sound bites and stuff that we get, and all the little funny quirks and stuff that we do to try to make you laugh. Pete helps us out with that as well. And he's got a show also on one of our affiliates, Indiana Talks, and he just couldn't even come up with a name of it, but it's just called What Is That Show? Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, how we doing, sir?
Well, I was doing good till your choice of adjectives, retarded. Wow, dude. See how fast I turn over production for you next time.
that's right. Now, I appreciate everything you do, Mr. Pete LaFuchsia. So, guys, let's just jump into this. There's no particular order. Obviously, the Colts drafted number 24, a good choice out of Florida. But we're going to start with you, Ed, because the Philadelphia Eagles drafted first, and you're getting ready to go into a press conference. We want to make sure we get all your thoughts on the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, we talked about last week's show that you thought they might trade down. That didn't happen. But I do want to go on the record here that I actually did call your pick. I'm almost positive I did call your first round pick here on the show last week. So thoughts on your first round pick of the NFL draft?
Yeah, well, Lane Johnson was the pick, and you did call it. You were absolutely correct. I think the Eagles would have taken Deion Jordan, though, had the Dolphins not traded up into the Raiders slot at number three, and really surprised everybody with that pick. It was assumed they were trading up to get Lane Johnson because they needed a tackle, and they ended up taking Deion Jordan. And I'm quite certain that's who the Eagles wanted at that spot. And then when he was picked, they went with Lane Johnson. To me, you really can't have too many offensive linemen in this day and age, and one who's as athletic as Lane Johnson is. You know, when you look at his combine numbers, they were actually better across the board than the first two tackles that came off, Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel. And then he went out and played well in the Senior Bowl. So he's got a lot of upside. I think the reason he wasn't picked higher than four, and of course pretty high, but was the fact that he's only been playing on the offensive line for 2 years. He was a quarterback, believe it or not. He's a 6 foot six. He was 6 foot six, 200 pounds when he came out of high school without a lot of offers. He went to a junior college, Kilgore Junior College, and was a quarterback. And he actually played quarterback for the first half of the season. And then when he came out of Oklahoma, he was recruited, or I'm sorry, out of Kilgore, he was recruited by Oklahoma to go play tight end, take Jermaine Gresham's spot at tight end when Gresham went and got drafted by the Bengals. You know, he played tight end, and then they switched him to defensive end, and then they had some injuries on the offensive line, and they moved him there. And for the last 2 years, that's what he's been doing. He's got a real mean streak. I think he's a good pick for the Eagles at that slot. You know, we'll see going forward just how high that ceiling is for Lane Johnson.
Well, the Canadians, will you guys will probably pick up a whole new fan base up there in Canada. I heard that he used to wrestle black bears, but I'm not totally.
Yeah, that was so bizarre. At the press conference yesterday, someone asked him, one of the television station reporters here in Philadelphia, asked him about wrestling black bears, and he played right along. And
yeah, absolutely.
It was on my uncle's ranch in East Texas, and you know, I won my share. Would never wrestle grizzlies, and we're all scrambling like, "Are you kidding me? This is incredible!" So about 20 minutes later, he pops his head into the media room and says, "You know what, guys? I was only, I was only kidding. Not his word, but you know that's what he said.
It wasn't really black. Kidding. It wasn't really black bears. It was grizzlies, right?" I did see that exchange. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So everybody, all the media, you know, we're all like, well, now what, Danny Watkins? He's not really a firefighter? Or, you know, what is this Manny Pacquiao all over again or what? So that led to a bunch of jokes. But it was kind of bizarre how he played along. And you know what, he kept a straight face. You know, I'll give him that. Maybe he's got a little bit of a prankster side. But as long as he can block Marcus Ware and Jason Pierre-Paul, I don't think Eagles fans will mind one bit.
All right, Mr. $2 Bill, Josh, and we're moving around the corner here. Josh, what are your thoughts on the Eagles pick and Colts pick and overall the first round?
Well, I'm going to disagree with Ed. I mean, it's a solid pick for the Eagles, but come on. You guys went 4-12 or whatever it is you went last year for a reason. Geno Smith, Matt Barkley, E.J. Manuel, Glennon, Nassib, we're all on the board. Michael Vick, really, you're going to bench him last year under Andy Reid, and Chip Kelly's going to fall in love with him, and that's supposed to magically make Michael Vick better? He is what he is. I don't understand how. If I was an Eagles season ticket holder, I might even cancel my tickets and go, you're for real not going to go get a quarterback. You pass on Alex.
Yeah. I'll say this, but really there's only three quarterbacks that have come off the board. So if the Eagles want a quarterback, they can certainly pick Ryan Nassib today. They can pick Matt Barkley today. I mean, there's still quarterbacks out there, but you know what? I don't think Michael Vick's going to be the quarterback of this team, to be honest with you. I think Chip Kelly has kind of revealed his plan a little bit by taking another tight end in the second round. I think Nick Foles is going to be the quarterback, and to be honest, I'm not sure the Eagles really know what they have in Nick Foles. So he was a third-round pick last year. There's so many needs on this team that, you know, to go out and take a reach of a quarterback. I mean, Geno Smith himself in the 39th pick of the Jets, you know, there's 38 other teams that had a crack at him, and nobody took him. E.J. Manuel went 16, and people in Buffalo were upset with it. So, you know, to say that they would go out and get a quarterback at number four, I think, would have been ridiculous. And I don't think the fan base here in Philadelphia would have been real happy with that.
Now, also, do we have – Jeff, are you on the line with us?
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good. I thought that was you. I just wanted to make sure. Speaking, Ed, of a bunch of things going on at one time, he kind of popped in here during your dialogue there, and I just wanted to make sure I had him. Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, you know, we're all serious guys here, but, Pete, one thing I love about you, you bring us back down to earth, and one great thing about your comedy routine, those that haven't seen it, you do good at poking fun at yourself. So, Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, I know you've got some thoughts about this NFL draft and your beloved Buffalo Bills.
Well, yeah, believe me, I agree with what he said about people in Buffalo. And I'm not even in Buffalo. I'm in Indiana, but a fan. And I really want to know what they were thinking when they drafted EJ from Florida State. Kid's a great quarterback, but he's not an awesome quarterback that I think would translate up there. Think about it. This kid has lived in the South his entire life. The only time – I think I heard the stat. He had only played in two cold weather games where the temperature was below 40 degrees, and you're going to draft him to Buffalo? Plus, he's also got a below-average rating when, or not rating, but accuracy when he throws a ball past 20 yards. So basically, he's going to be throwing jump balls in the cold weather when he's never really experienced cold weather most of his life. So I don't know if that's necessarily good. I mean, that's what some of these teams need to look at when you've got a Cleveland, a Buffalo, Green Bay and the Bears, they play in bad weather. New England would be another one to throw out there. They play in bad weather for a good portion of the season. Why is it that they keep tempted to going to these Sun Belt and warm weather kids that have never been outside of that area? And I think that's where it's going to be a bad choice. I personally, as a fan, I'm so sick of not going to the playoffs that I hope that you guys are going to say, hey, Pete, remember back in April when you said he was a bad choice and he's leading you to the playoffs for the first time in 14 years? I want you to come slap me because I deserve it and I want to see that we're actually doing good. But right now, if I'm looking on paper, I don't think this is a good one. I think going for somebody like Geno Smith out of West Virginia would have been a better pick for them, seeing as he's actually had some experience in horrible weather. If you've ever been to West Virginia, there's nothing there, whether it be weather, nice, nothing. So you can go to Buffalo, and it's like you're not taking him out of his habitat, okay? You're not taking a gorilla out of the midst of Africa and putting him in a cage in central Louisiana, okay? You're basically taking him from crap and putting him into crap, and he would function there. I think he would have been a better pick. Now, on the draft overall, I've got to say I'm – the most proudest of the fact that this is the most offensive and defensive lineman dense draft in the first part ever. I was so happy to see so many linemen going so far up in the draft. That basically says, you know what? We're investing all this money in all these good players. We've got to start protecting them because they're getting hurt. The linemen that are there are retiring at a massive rate. We need to replace them, and I think that was the kick in the butt that the NFL saw needed. Now, the big surprise was Eric Fisher being drafted over Luke out of Texas A&M, because I never thought I – when I woke up and heard the replay of the thing, with the first pick in the 2013 draft, the Chiefs go with Eric Fisher of Central Michigan. I never thought I would heard from Central Michigan being – uttered in there. And how bad is that got to be in the state of Michigan that Michigan State, who's had some really good football teams throughout history, has never had a number one pick, but now Central Michigan has one over them, and one more ties them up with regular Michigan. So I think that's a good for him, and actually good for the math, because they've never had a player drafted higher.
Pete, and I hate to cut you off because I want to make sure that we get to Jeff's thoughts there. But, Jeff, the Bears, give us your thought about the Bears. Obviously, the Colts didn't quite go the way you had thought. We're talking with Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, The Draft Guide 2013. And, Jeff, how proud were you of your – and I didn't go and compare all your picks, but how'd you turn out in the first couple rounds here with your book, and what did you think about the Colts and the Bears picks there?
Well, thanks for having me on, Tom. In general, from the book, I did a 3-round mock draft, and I'm about 80 to 85% on players that I projected to go within the first 3 rounds who were selected. In terms of exact matches, that's a little more difficult because you have trades, and there were quite a few, more than I anticipated, actually, especially in the top 10 that kind of jungled things up. But I did come up with 4 or 5 first-round exact matches. I had projected Indianapolis for taking Jonathan Hankins. They actually did go with the defensive end in Warner, and in a Facebook mock draft I did right before the draft took place, I did project that, so I'm going to give myself a little credit there. So, in general, I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out. I mean, if you really watch the coverage, you never know exactly what NFL teams are thinking, and even people who are self-proclaimed experts miss a few. But in general, I'm happy, and some of the guys that went higher than I thought, I'm not so sure that I really am on the same wavelength with the teams there, and that would include the Chicago Bears. I thought that was a miss at pick number 20. Kyle Long I had projected in the second round, mid-second. I think he is a very raw, undeveloped player. He's only started 5 games at Oregon in his career. I think the Bears got fooled a little bit by his athletic ability. He tested very well, both at the combine and his pro day. So he's a guy who's just scratching the surface of his potential, and I think they think he has a high ceiling. He'll get much better. But I think there were much better options on the board. I would have either went Tyler Eifert, the tight end from Notre Dame, or even Manti Te'o. As far as Indianapolis's pick, Warner's a guy who grew up in Germany. I think the interesting thing about him, and I'm not sure if I shared this previously, he learned how to play football by playing Madden football on his he really picked up a lot of the terminology. He's a guy that was projected as maybe a top 10 to 15 pick at the end of the season. He slid down a little bit, not necessarily anything that he did wrong. He's a little stiff. He's a good pass rusher, good first step quickness, not to refill off the edge. I think he'll be a guy that will be a good, solid all-around player. You can insert him into the lineup for probably the next decade, and he'll give you a solid effort. He may never be a pro bowler year in, year out, but he'll be a very solid pro and a good player to have in the locker room. As far as the quarterbacks, I think everybody thought that it was kind of a subpar group of quarterbacks this year, and the way that they came off the board has kind of reflected that. I was surprised in E.J. Manuel being the first one selected. However, I have to say this, and I think the question about how he adapts to the climate in Buffalo is a very valid one. He was a rising player. His accuracy and decision-making really improved over his senior year. And he stood out in his senior year.
Jeff? Jeff?
Very high ceiling. I am surprised that not more have come off the board. I wouldn't be surprised if Matt Barkley was the first pick in the fourth round today by Jacksonville. There are still some teams that need quarterbacks, including Cleveland, Philadelphia. So there's other guys that are out there. Usually, I think NFL teams can't help themselves. So when a quarterback comes off the board, there's a run. But there hasn't been this year. So guys have the teams have kind of reflected their feelings that the quarterback class is not a real solid one overall, and that's been reflected in how they've drafted.
Hey, Jeff, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Part of your you kind of faded out there. I don't know if you took this off on a speakerphone, but anyway, I agree with you. There were some parts that were choppy there, and if not, we'll certainly get back to anything we missed there. But I'm going back to Ed Kratz here of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and I know he's on a very limited schedule. He's getting ready to go into a presser because the Eagles are looking pretty sharp today on a Saturday. I wish I could take credit for that. That just came from a tweet from the Philadelphia Eagles. So I wish I could take credit for that. But you guys, overall, you take Benny Logan in the sixth defensive tackle, in the 67th overall, and you pick tight end Zach Ertz, 35th overall. So overall, speaking, Ed, thoughts on who you've picked so far?
Yeah, well, I think it's been a solid draft. I don't think they've reached for anybody so far. They haven't made any trades. We're so used to seeing general manager Howie Roseman, when Andy Reid was here, make a lot of trades, kind of moving around. And I think it has to do with their board, at least talking to general manager Howie Roseman last night. He said that there's just incredible value on the board. And, there's guys that they want when their pick comes. So there's really no need for them to trade and be jumping all over the place. And, I think it's been a solid draft, but, you know, to me, I thought the Eagles really needed to put some emphasis on defense. Now, maybe they'll do that today, you know, on day three here. You know, they need cornerbacks, I think. I think they need a safety. They could use a linebacker. And they still don't have a pass rusher, to be honest. I don't know where the sacks are going to come from next season. But, you know, I think Chip Kelly's philosophy right now is, hey, we're just going to outscore teams, you know, 44 to 40. You know, we're going to go out and take all our three-point shooters, and we're just going to play basketball out on the grass and, you know, see what happens. Because, really, that defense is still, to me, questionable. I think Benny Logan was a pretty good pick. He's a defensive tackle. He's not a difference maker. He can stop the run and, you know, maybe provide some pass rush, you know, collapse the pocket from the inside. But I don't see him as a defensive end type. He said on his conference call last night that he thinks he can play outside at defensive end. He's never done it. But, you know, at 6'2", 310 pounds, a kid can move. So, you know, I'm not going to doubt him. If the Eagles want to try him outside and see if they can get some pass rush out there, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, I love the pick of the tight end. I thought it was a great pick. The Eagles are probably going to go three tight ends a lot this year. And, you know, Chip said last night in one of his pressers, he said that, you know, listen, coaching's easy. He goes, all I do is I hold up three fingers, I send my three tight ends out. If they want to send three linebackers out there, we're just going to throw the ball. If they put three DBs out there, we're just going to smash you and we're going to run it. So, you know, that's why I think Nick Foles is going to be this quarterback. I think he's a more accurate thrower than Vic. I think given time to study this offense, I don't think he'll be as turnover prone as Vic. And I'm not saying there's not a role for Vic in this offense. You know, they can bring him in and run sort of a wildcat-type system, more of a read option, present the threat of running, not necessarily running, but, you know, you have to kind of defend Vic as a runner and a thrower. So, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see what sort of offense Kelly runs this season. The defense, another story. They're going to give up a lot of points, I think.
We're joined by Ed Kratz, along with $2 Bill Josh, Pete LaFuchsia, and Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws and author of The Slant. Now, how much more time do you have with us, Ed? Do you have to go or do you got to?
No,
I'm good.
The pressure's not till 11, so I can sign off at 5 up. You know, I will say about E.J. Manuel and Kyle Long that the Bears took for Jeff. I think the Bears are looking too at his bloodlines. Kyle Long is the son of Howie Long, who played at Villanova right here in Philadelphia, and you know, he's a Hall of Famer, you know, actually. And I think they're looking at some bloodlines there. And, you know, he may have a ceiling. I know the Eagles were probably interested in taking him at number two had they gone with Deion Jordan number one. I thought it was a little bit high. But, you know, I think you have to give Kyle Long a little bit of time to develop and see what sort of offense Mark Trestman's going to run. You know, I know he likes to get his offensive linemen out in space running and making plays. And, you know, Kyle Long might be that athletic type. Because I know 2 years ago they just took Gabe Kareemi, right, another tackle who had some injury issues last year. You know, I don't know what his status is, but I love Kareemi coming out of Wisconsin 2 years ago. I really thought the Eagles might take him 2 years ago, but they didn't, and he went later in the 20s to the Bears. But, you know, I think Kyle Long could develop just based on, you know, his father, Howie, being an NFL Hall of Famer. And, you know, maybe that gene pool, you know, will produce some benefits for the Bears. We'll see.
Well, absolutely. And like I said, we're talking with $2 Bill Josh, Pete LaFuchsia, Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. We're breaking down the first few rounds of the NFL draft, and we're so glad that you guys could join us. We do got to take a break, and when we get back, we're gonna talk a little bit about the elephant in the room, or as Pete would put it, the bumper. See, I can't do more than one thing, guys. I'm actually reading things I shouldn't be reading. I shouldn't be saying the word bumper. I should just be looking at my screen. See, Ed, you got me all discombobulated. The gorilla in the room, as Pete would say, and that's the – we'll get into this whole KO question, the Chargers, and all of that stuff. We'll be right back on the Balance Radio Network.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Hey.
It's about getting there. The Indianapolis 500, May 26th.
My daddy left us. I was only 6 months older than you are now.
I don't remember him. You will remember me.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
Your enemy will be out in force, but you cannot meet him on his own low ground.
What you going to do if one of these pictures goes through your head?
I'll duck.
Mark my words and circle this day. Negroes are going to run the white man straight out of baseball.
This ain't the America I know. You hear me?
If they knew you, they would be ashamed.
If Robinson can help us win, then he is going to play on this ball club.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
Where are we now?
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
You give me a uniform. You give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
I father, I Brooklyn Dodger them. I Jack, I Rob, I Spin. Oh man, I'm Jackie Robinson. Except when I run base, I dodge the pen.
I'm just a ball player.
You're a hero.
Why don't you look in the mirror? This is a white man's game.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here.
I'm a Brooklyn boy. I may take some getting used to.
Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
All right, welcome back to the Balance Radio Network. This is the Balance every Saturday morning. On a program note, if you're listening to us on Indiana Talks, they were unable to run us live today. Obviously, they're an affiliate of ours. I'm not really sure what that was. Reason for that is, but they say they're going to run us at 3 o'clock this afternoon Eastern. So I apologize if you're listening to us on Indiana Talks and it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's just a part of radio. Sometimes just things are beyond your control. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand what goes on when you do radio. And got people typing things to you and things pop up here. They say play bumper this, do that. So, you know, I was beginning to read things on the mic that I shouldn't have been doing. So, hey, you know, it is what it is. Never bring your mistakes to the light because nobody knows what they are. But, you know, the great thing about my minions is they're the greatest fans in the world. Justin Bieber thinks he's got great fans. We got great fans. And I'll tell you what, we've got great contributors. Mr. $2 Bill Josh, Ed Kratz, Calkins Media beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, Mr. Pete LaFuchsia, of what show is this? And Mr. Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2013 draft guide, and writer for Bear Claws. We're breaking down the most recent draft picks, and we want to talk about, not that I'm calling Manti Te'o a gorilla, but let's call him that just for purposes of conversations. I wouldn't say that to his face necessarily, but we knew somebody was going to draft him, and we knew that it was going to be somebody. We'd be talking about somebody drafting him. Good fit, bad fit, guys, we'll talk about this. I want to get your thoughts, and then we'll get into the winners and losers of this year's draft. And I was really surprised to see that we didn't see really any running backs or, you know, any typical people drafted in the first rounds. It was all offensive tackles, defensive tackles, and, you know, were probably good for those teams. Obviously, Te'o, we knew, lost a lot of stock in his draft, and perhaps maybe he would have drafted higher, but the Chargers picked him up. So, guys, we'll start with you, Mr. $2 Bill. Josh, thoughts on Te'o going to the Chargers? Good fit, bad fit, and are we ready to start watching him actually play some football? And let's get past this other stuff, whatever it was. Josh?
Well, I do think it's a good fit. San Diego Chargers needed a linebacker, but I'm of the opinion he didn't drop to the second round because of the whole Lenny Kinkua story or any of that. He dropped to the second round because he ran a 4.8 time. Isn't your 40 time a 4.7? I mean, come on, you're faster than Manti Te'o. Children are faster than Manti Te'o. That's the reason he dropped to the second round. So they can actually get him a way to find a little bit of speed. He'll be an all right fit. As far as the whole girlfriend exists, didn't exist, who really cares? Everybody during school had an imaginary friend, an imaginary girlfriend. Every guy's done it at one point in time during high school. So let's just get past it and watch him play football.
Hey, I had one of those imaginary girlfriends all the way up to like last year. So, you know, I'm kidding. All right. We'll go with you, Ed. Ed Kratz, beat writer. You know, obviously this Te'o story is just engulfed everybody, and really for no apparent reason. I still don't know what the heck happened with him, what that was all about. Really, I don't really care if he's got an imaginary girlfriend. I don't really honestly care if he's gay or not gay or whatever. Every story that came out from him, if it was a true hoax, it was a mean joke. I don't really, if there's a part of me that doesn't believe in today's society that somebody's that naive, but that's neither here nor there. Really, he's a football player. Obviously did very well at Notre Dame. So what are your thoughts about Te'o going to the Chargers? Good fit, bad fit, Ed?
I agree with $2 Bill there. The Chargers needed a linebacker, and, you know, Manti Te'o was a finalist for the Heisman. You know, I was really rooting for him to win the Heisman because you don't see any defensive players ever win the Heisman. So he was good enough to get himself in that position. I know his speed is questionable, but, you know, he plays on the inside in a 4-3 defense or a 3-4. He's an inside linebacker. So, you know, running sideline to sideline isn't something that, you know, is going to really impact him. I don't know why speed would be that big of an issue with him. And, you know, I think the second round was probably about right for him. Maybe he could have gotten into the first round. The Bears could have been a possibility, like Jeff said. But, you know, I think he's going to be a good football player. He was very productive in college. You know, he's got good ball instincts, and he's able to get himself in position to make interceptions. You know, I just hope he's strong enough to take on, you know, the blocking that he's going to face in the NFL. You know, everybody, of course, is bigger, stronger than they were in college. But, you know, I think he can kind of layer himself in the weight room and get stronger. And I think he can be a productive linebacker in the NFL. He is a very naive kid. You know, I thought it was telling when he said that he saw when he got the call letting him know he was drafted, that he saw the area code come up from California and he thought it was his friends pranking him. So, you know, he's still kind of a naive young man and, you know, probably needs to do some maturing and kind of get out of that cocoon that he's grown up in and has been sheltered in at Notre Dame. And, you know, I think he'll be fine out in San Diego. He's close to Hawaii, too. He's just a 4-hour plane ride away from Hawaii. So, you know, I think he's going to be fine. I like Manti Te'o. I'll call him Manti Te'o. I hope he has a good NFL career.
Right. And now we'll go over to you, Pete. I know, obviously, and, you know, we should have thought about this, Pete. Last week when we were putting together our mock draft, we should have had Elizabeth the Greek do a mock draft for us in the first couple rounds. We didn't think about that. But Pete LaFuchsia, and we'll be excited when the NFL season starts again next year and season two of Elizabeth the Greek starts up. But Pete LaFuchsia, obviously you're a big Notre Dame fan. So you're very familiar with Teo. Teo to the Chargers, good choice, bad fit, good fit. Bad fit.
Well, first off, with the Elizabeth the Greek, I have a hard enough time getting a 4- and 5-year-old to decide between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints. Yeah, she's going to come out with Giovanni Bernard or Geno Smith or something hard like that. No, it ain't gonna. That wasn't going to happen. But when it comes down to Manti Te'o, the Chargers, I think, is going to be a perfect fit for him. They both got something in common. They both have a trophy. He had a trophy girlfriend. They have a Super Bowl trophy. Oh, wait, they don't. I think when you come to the aesthetics of that is the closest team to Hawaii, and that's what he's kind of known for. I think that might make a couple people pick up a plane trip to come over and catch a game on the mainland. So for the Chargers in that aspect, he might be a perfect regional fit for that, where sometimes a person can fit there. I think the Bears passing up on him, I heard a lot of flack that they didn't go after him because keeping him here in the Midwest, even though the catfishing and the girlfriend thing, there's still a lot of people in the Midwest that love him and would have loved to seen him stay in a Chicago, a Green Bay, or Cleveland, somewhere in this general area, which I don't think I necessarily would have disagreed with. That would have been good. But the Chargers, that's going to be good for him. And hopefully the thing, it'll never blow over. If he gets in the Hall of Fame, they're still going to be referring to that. He's tagged with the whole girlfriend catfishing thing for the rest of his life. So just move on with it. I think the Chargers are going to help him. But I agree with the gentleman who said earlier, he's now going to start facing a lot harder linemen and the blocking. Yeah, we'll see if that can get done.
Well, I got a feeling that now that he's a professional football player and he's with the San Diego Chargers, I got a feeling his offers of female companionship will be endless. And now he'll be asking himself when it's really going on, is this really going on? Is this for real? No, Mr. Jeff Kurtz. Bear Claws, Teo, good fit for San Diego. I know you would have liked to see him kind of step up and fill a void that Urlacher left, but good fit, bad fit for the Chargers on Teo.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent fit for him, Tom. I was surprised that he wasn't picked late in the first round. I think a couple teams passed him up, including the Bears. I think it would have been a perfect fit to step in. Later, they filled that spot with their second-round selection, Jonathan Bostic of Florida. But Teo is kind of away from the media spotlight in San Diego. They play a 3-4 defense. I think the girlfriend catfish scheme is kind of old news. I think the teams were more concerned about how he ran at the combine in his pro day, but then when they flipped on the tape and looked at how productive he was over his 4-year career at Notre Dame, how he was really the leader of that team, that he's a very good football player and a good value pick at that selection in the draft. So I would expect him to step in right away and be able to contribute. And I don't know if he's a pro bowler, but I think he's going to have a very solid career for a long time in the NFL.
Well, what a fantastic treat it would be for him to actually make it to the Pro Bowl and end up out there in Hawaii to play for his home crowd. Well, guys, let's talk about the winners, the losers, who we have in the NFL draft and who really was the winners. And let's just kind of go through some of these in no particular order. We talked about Teo, obviously, Chargers. I would think that would go in the win column. The San Francisco 49ers, I think they did well on playing the draft board this year. Jeff, what are your thoughts? Put them in the win column or the loss column this year?
Oh, certainly in the win column. They had a lot of choices coming in, and they've accumulated even more picks. I really like what they did. Jim Harbaugh and the general manager out there, Trenton Baalke, have done a nice job of maneuvering. They picked up, I believe, even a choice for the 2014 draft. So really like the selection of players. They've strengthened some areas that are very good. Keep your eye on their Rice tight end, Vance McDonald, who was their selection in the second round. I think that even though they already have Vernon Davis, he's a player that really came on, had a great Senior Bowl week, good mix of size, speed, and hands, very athletic, underrated player, intelligent. So they've maneuvered. They have a lot of choices left today. I also like the job that Minnesota did. They had three first-round draft choices. They targeted needs both along the defense and also at wide receiver. And I think St. Louis, with Jeff Fisher at the helm calling the shots really in the draft board, did a nice job as well. So those would be the teams that I would consider the winners. And I think New England was another club that had a lot of draft choices. Bill Belichick is a master of the draft board. They've accumulated even more. And I really like what they did yesterday with a couple of selections as well.
Well, and certainly when we look at winner columns, we want to look at the Bengals. I mean, look at Mike Brown has really kind of turned into one of those best drafters in the NFL. And he went with the Notre Dame tight end, Tyler Eifert, and the running back from North Carolina. So certainly we want to put the Bengals in the win column. So, Ed, your thoughts on the winners, and who would you put in the win column? If we've not mentioned any teams so far, but we're talking about the 49ers, New England, the Bengals. Who do you think are in the win columns? And if you want to throw in the Eagles, that's fine too, as far as the winners in this 2013 draft.
I think I'm going to take a different tack there. I think the winners are the tight ends. You know, I think you're seeing an evolution of this position. Teams need two good tight ends now, and I think you're seeing guys in the 6'4", 6'7", range playing tight end, guys who play basketball who know they're not going to be NBA players, so they begin playing football and they become tight ends. And, you know, we see it with the New England Patriots with Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. The Eagles are going to play three. They drafted Ertz, who's 6'5". They have Celek, who's 6'4". They're going to be on the field a lot together. They may even take another tight end today. I just think you're seeing, you know, look at the run on tight ends in the second round yesterday. Gavin Escobar gets picked by the Cowboys. Vance McDonald goes to San Francisco. Hurts the Eagles. Travis Kelce goes somewhere I can't remember. But, you know, tight ends to me are the big winners in this draft. I think you're seeing an evolution of that position. Losers, if you stay with the position, they're the running backs. Not a single one taken in the first round. I think that's indicative of the way the league's going. They're looked at as a dime a dozen type position. Their NFL life expectancy, if you will, is 3 to 5 years. So you're constantly churning running backs. You know, they're the big losers. So, I go positionally. Draft isn't completely over yet. I'm not ready to anoint any winners and losers, you know, with 3 rounds left to go, or 4 rounds, I guess it is. Yeah, 4 rounds. So, I'm anxious to see Tavon Austin and the Rams. I think the Rams are having a good draft. I think Tavon Austin's an exciting player. It's going to be interesting to see how he translates with Jeff Fisher in that offense. So, I just go positionally right now. The tight ends are having a huge golden age right now, and the running backs not so much.
All right. Now, Mr. $2 Bill, Josh, winners, losers in this year's draft?
Losers, I'm going to say, is the Baltimore Ravens. Based on free agency and who they picked in the draft so far, I think the Ravens are having a bad all-season. Winners, I'm going to sound like a homer here. The Indianapolis Colts, I dare one person to make a credible argument of one player the Indianapolis Colts are now missing. Whether it be through the draft or free agency, I don't see a hole on the roster.
Well, I think obviously Grigson's did a great job stepping in here, and Ed can speak to what a great asset he is and was to the Eagles and is now to the Colts. I think he's did a great job on filling the holes with that. And Ed, you're very familiar with Grigson. So what do you think about what he's been able to do in 1 year's time? And we'll just giving him credit because that's – when things go bad, it's still going to be his fault. So we might as well, when things go good, we'll give him credit for it. Obviously, there's a lot of working parts. But what do you think about his overall job performance so far here at Indianapolis?
I think it's been terrific. Look at the turnaround the Colts made last year, and you know, yeah, it helped having that number one pick and getting Andrew Luck, you know, right there. You know, imagine if you'd have been in this draft, he would have gone to Kansas City, right? I mean, anybody would have taken him number one, and you know, he was kind of a no brainer. But you know, football's 11-on-11, and I think you know, Gregson's done a real nice job of filling in parts around him. You know, has gotten some weapons for him that have kind of gone under the radar a little bit. I like Werner. I think he's going to be a good piece to rush the passer. You needed to replace Freeney on the end there. And, you know, I think Ryan Grigson's, you know, one of the top, you know, executives in the league, and he's proven that. You know, but again, we'll see what they do this year. You know, the NFL is a year-to-year league, and, you know, I like what he's done, and you just hope it translates for him on the field. Because, you know, I like Ryan Grigson. He's a good guy, and, you know, it's hard not to look for good guys.
Absolutely. All right, Pete. Winners, losers in this year's draft?
Well, I got to say, till they drafted Geno Smith, I have to say the Jets, because looking at D. Milner and his injuries, you wonder what were they thinking and then to draft him as high as they did. It just goes back to what is Rex Ryan doing? That one right there would probably make me say that the big winner, I'd have to say, is probably a tie between the Raiders with some of the trading they did and what one of the gentlemen said earlier about the Bengals. I think the choices they got and then adding Tyler Eifert, homeboy from Fort Wayne up here, man, I love him. And I don't know if you saw the press conference, but he took number 85. And I think it's funny that because people thought that, oh, nobody will touch that jersey in Cincinnati for a while. He grabbed it, and I think that's kind of cool. And I hope he makes a name for it to much greater than Chad Johnson did. But I highly doubt on that one. But yeah, I said big winners, the Bengals and the Raiders.
Well, and I agree with you on that, Pete, completely. I mean, Geno Smith, I like him. I just don't think he knows what an uphill battle he's got there in the Jets. And I guess that brings us to our last topic of discussion that we're going to have time for today. And we'll start with Jeff Kurtz on this. But Revis leaving the Jets and a big trade going on there. So we haven't really talked about that much. I know that's not really part of the draft, but the Jets, I mean, one could argue, Jeff, that Revis was probably the best player that the Jets had. I don't know, Tampa, he's now a Buck, but what are your thoughts on Revis leaving What was that, a good trade, bad trade? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it was such a huge story. We'd be remiss if we didn't at least talk about it a little bit, Jeff.
Sure, and it did impact the draft because Tampa Bay had to give up their first pick at number 13 for the Jets. So I think it was a good move for New York, actually. Revis is a guy coming off an ACL injury who's held out a couple times during his career already. Wasn't happy there, wasn't going to be happy. I think that, you know, there's no sure thing that he's going to be the shutdown corner that he was before. I think the Jets are a team that are kind of retooling and rebuilding a little bit, even though they may not want to think that way. I think all the moves that they've made have given that indication. So picking up another first-round pick, and we can argue the merits of how they used it, was it used well. But I think it's a win-win for both clubs. But I kind of favor the Jets getting the better end of the deal. From a Tampa Bay perspective, he's going to help. But really, they struggle from a pass rush standpoint. So no matter how good your cornerbacks are, if you don't have a pass rush, they can't cover forever. And I think that there's a likelihood that in a year or two, they may want to revisit the contract that they gave him. He may be unhappy again. I just don't see how one player, specifically at that position, is really going to have the impact. And I think they're going to regret maybe making that deal down the road. I favor the Jets in terms of the trade they made.
Well, I hope so, because the Jets couldn't get any worse. Ed Kratz, what are your thoughts on this whole Revis trade, the Jets, in a lot of people's opinion, and probably one of mine, probably got rid of the best player they had, and they're still probably the worst team in football.
Yeah, well, I think a knee injury is always a concern. Maybe not so much as it used to be with
you know, the way modern medicine is today. I think the new injury that's more of a concern these days is the Achilles. You don't know how you're going to bounce back from an Achilles, but I think Revis will be okay. I've heard no reports that, you know, this is a type of a degenerative knee issue. The Tampa Bay secondary last year was the worst in football, and they got conceivably the best defensive back in football. And again, I think the knee will be fine with proper rehab. He's always been a good teammate in New York. The issues were his contract, the front office issues that he had. You know, his teammates loved him. He's a very coachable kid. I think he's going to do just fine in Tampa. I think the Jets squandered that pick that they got for him at 13. I mean, Sheldon Richardson's a good player. But, you know, I think it's the third year in the last four that the Jets have drafted a defensive lineman. And, you know, they're in an odd situation. They brought in a new general manager, John Idzik, and they kept on their coach, Rex Ryan. And I think Rex Ryan still might be calling the shots because – you know, they really loaded up on defense. Dean Milner's a good player. Is he the next Revis? I don't think so. I think he's going to be very good. The concern with him is that he's had five surgeries in college, you know, and you wonder, you know, how many more of those he can sustain. So, you know, I think the Jets may have, you know, I don't think they used those two picks very wisely. And I just think it's because it's an odd front office dynamic with the new GM and you know, the holdover head coach. So we'll see how that goes. But I think Tampa's going to be real happy with Revis. On that note, Tom, I have to jump off. I'm getting ready to head into a press conference here with Zach. Thanks.
Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, and you guys can follow him, and we'll have his Twitter information up on our social media. But certainly, he, a beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, always glad to have him on with us, and we knew he was getting ready to go into the press for guys. We've only got just a few short minutes, and I do want to take time on this Thursday, Hot Corner, myself, $2 Bill Josh, and others. We break down all the MLB action for an hour, as well as right here on Indiana Talks, guys. All right, well, we've got time for a few final thoughts. So we'll start with you, $2 Bill Josh. We'll have to have you guys keep your rants to a very minimum. But, Josh, go ahead, final thoughts today. Really about any.
Well, if the Jets plan to cut Tim Tebow, hopefully they'll trade him. And if I'm Ryan Grigson, Matt Hasselbeck doesn't have long left. You know, Tim Tebow doesn't have problems being a backup. He just wants to know that he's going to be the backup. If I'm Grigson, I call Isaac and I say, hey, you don't want him. We would love him. He's a great guy who would fit in Indianapolis perfectly. If you're going to cut him, what do you say we give you one of our seventh-round picks, give you another pick, and we get Tim Tebow? Do I think it'll happen? No. Do I think it should happen? Yes, there's a storyline potentially to watch for during the rest of today's show.
All right, Jeff Kurtz, any final thoughts?
Sure, I'm going to stay on the theme of the NFL draft since that's what our topic's been today. Today is actually my favorite day of the draft, rounds 4 through 7, because this is where the team's front offices and scouting departments really make their money. It's a lot of players that are very good but are somewhat undervalued, or maybe they've had an injury or didn't perform up to speed during their senior season. You have to dig deep. Teams from smaller schools, maybe a little bit more obscure, will rise to the occasion. I think an interesting thought I would like to leave your listeners with, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there are more undrafted players enshrined than there are first-round draft picks.
That is an interesting bit of trivia, and Jeff, we always you just have a plethora of knowledge, and I appreciate you joining us. Real quick, Jeff, where can people find your work and your masterpieces at?
Sure. For any NFL draft fans, whether you're thinking about what your team did or looking ahead to the fantasy football season, log on to theslantdraftguide.com. We're all over Facebook as well, and bearsclassfootball.com.
Absolutely, and I got that draft guide myself, The Slant, and it's a fantastic resource, and certainly especially for fantasy people. All right, Jeff, we appreciate you jumping on board with us, and we'll talk with you more as the season goes along.
Take care now, guys. Bye.
All right, thank you. Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws, an author of The Slant, the 2013 draft guide. Well, we saved the best for last. To Pete LaFuchsia. Pete, just say whatever's on your mind, brother.
Well, as a Bills fan, it'll be glad this time next year that we have such high picks, because I don't see us doing anything with any of the picks we've got so far. Hopefully, with Tim Tebow being available, the one thing the Bills have done in the past, they've kind of has been quarterbacks there, and with what's his name, Flutie, they kind of did a little bit there, maybe bringing Tebow in, saying that, hey, we'll bring him in for a year, and that'll give the guy that they just drafted from Florida State, E.J. Manley, a chance to get some experience under him and hopefully acclimate to the weather. I think that's the only thing they can do, in my opinion, as a fan for them. But overall, draft, it's been about what they thought. Not very many quarterbacks, again, being
all right, Pete, I hate to interrupt you, but we're up against the clock here, guys. We've got to go. That's going to do it for us for today. Remember to check us out on the Hot Corner on Saturday. I mean, on Thursday from 5 to 6 right here on Blog Talk Radio and Indiana Talks. We'll see you guys next week. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.